Chapter 10. Take Responsibility. Responsibility for our own minds and those of our children's. In an evaluation culture, it is easy to leave the responsibility for taking action to others. But when we relinquish our responsibility, we also relinquish the ability to make choices that affect our lives. And then we get stuck, because then others will be in charge of us. This may be in relation to our life circumstances, where we may not be functioning optimally. Instead of taking responsibility ourselves to move or create the necessary changes, we end up being fired, abandoned, or overlooked. This can also be in relation to our well-being, where others end up deciding what is good for us. If we do not want to be a part of the choices that are being made around us in our daily lives and in our psychological lives, we end up with a life that is put together by the people who happen to be around us. The reason why we often do not take responsibility is due to our CAS, and our inward focus takes up so much of our time that we never actually take action. Metacognitive therapy helps us to minimize what prevents us from making a choice and acting on it. But this also means that we first have to take responsibility, because if we do not take responsibility for our own minds, who will? Your own mind. Taking responsibility for your own mind also means deciding which form of therapy best suits you. Just as soon as we have a minimum level of knowledge about the mind and various forms of treatment, the therapist that we are sitting across from is more likely to be able to help us. This does not mean that you should read thick books on therapy, but a visit to a therapist's website and a few searches on different forms of therapy can go a long way. This is also true regarding my own practice. In particular, this can mean that the client avoids a sense of failure because it is not certain that the client is interested in the method I can offer, or that my method necessarily is best for the client. Then the feeling can arise that nobody can help you, but there can be other therapists with other approaches that will be more suitable. Here it is important to emphasize that the therapist should of course be aware of their responsibility and not adapt a certain theory to their client because that is the one the therapist uses. The client might need a completely different approach. Loyalty must lie with the client and not the theory. But many ineffective therapy sessions could probably be avoided if the client did not just choose blindly, but made sure to research the therapist and the therapist's treatment methods from the beginning. Clients may sometimes feel that the cause of their psychological distress is important to identify. Knowing the cause is unimportant for me to be able to help them, because the metacognitive approach does not invite digging into people's pasts. Sometimes it can be essential to get information about the types of therapy the client has tried in the past. And if the client themselves has a theory about when the problem arose, this may tell something about their perspective on life and be relevant in relation to their goals and wishes. But if a client wants to hold on to their past and continue to return to the past, the metacognitive approach is not what the person is looking for. The metacognitive approach may well be what helps the client out of their depression or the onset of depression, but they must also be willing to work metacognitively. One of my former clients, a woman in her mid-50s, had had recurrent depression for several years. Her mother had died some years before, and this, along with other social problems, meant that she was even worse off. Her relationship to her mother had been strained, and she never managed to be reconciled with her mother before she died. The woman had tried several different types of therapy, but primarily psychodynamic therapy, where part of the treatment involved talking to the therapist about her past and about her mother. So far, however, without any noticeable results. Already during the first session we had, she told me that the therapy was not what she had expected. She had thought that we would talk much more about her relationship to her now deceased mother. But she had just told me that she had already tried this several times before with other therapists, and it had not helped her. So why do the same thing as before? Perhaps she had not talked enough about it, she thought. My attitude was that, yes, of course we could sit and talk about her mother, but why not try something new? We completed a few sessions where we did not go into her past. Once she asked me whether we should never talk about her mother. I looked over the list of her goals that we filled out the very first time. The list said that she wanted to feel better mentally and she did not want to be depressed anymore. Therefore, I asked her whether she was seeing me to work on her past or to get better. She wanted to feel better, but she also wanted to continue to talk about her past. She did not want to put it behind her. Therefore, I had to refer her to another psychologist who had a different approach than mine. She was a ruminator who did not want to let go, and so I was not the right psychologist for her. Perhaps she could have avoided the course of therapy with me if she had known a little more about the metacognitive approach and had researched what the therapy entailed. We often forget that the responsibility for our own psyches still lies to a great extent with us. People can sometimes confuse the means with the end. The woman in this example thought that she would feel better if she continued to talk about her past and her mother, and therefore she wanted to continue with the same form of therapy that she had tried previously. In my assessment, this approach would not help her. The remedy was not to talk and think about the past, but the opposite, to talk and think about it less. The point here is that many people believe that their ruminating is part of the solution, but it is actually part of the problem. Our children's psychological development. Just as the responsibility for our own psyches lies with ourselves, the responsibility for our children's psyches also lies with us. One of the dangers of an evaluation culture is that we come to disclaim our responsibility and pass it on to the many authorities and institutions that surround us in our daily lives. As parents, we should have an overview of how society functions, and we need to know what is demanded of an individual to participate in society. At some point, we made a choice that we and our children are part of our community. Therefore, we also need to make sure that we give our children these tools so that they too can have the best opportunities to be part of it. We need to give our children psychological resilience, because even though the responsibility for our children never ends, our children will become adults one day, and they must be able to look after themselves. This does not mean that we should give them a wealth of options at an age where they're not able to make choices for themselves. If my son says that he does not want to go to school, it is my responsibility to make sure that he goes anyway. And if he says he will not brush his teeth because he does not want to, I am also the one who decides that this is not a point of discussion, and here he has no choice. We can sometimes be too democratic when it comes to our children, because the cognitive processes or mental structures through which they can make decisions are still developing. But we must ensure that they have the opportunity to develop and take responsibility for what they can take responsibility for. This requires a delicate balance, because how do we know when we as parents take on too much responsibility for our children? And how do we know when we take on too little? When do we make decisions because our children are not ready to make them? And when do we make too many decisions for them and prevent them from developing? The young man in Chapter 8, whose parents drove him to and from therapy, had been stripped of any responsibility, even though he was capable of doing many things himself. His parents just did not see this. The children have the difficult feelings. We parents can sometimes be very concerned about whether our children have learned how to tie their own shoelaces, or whether they can figure out how to put on their winter jackets. It is fine if children can do these things, But there is no need to worry about an 8-year-old not being able to tie their own shoelaces. The child will learn. It is far more important that the 8-year-old is a good friend to their classmates, or that they can comfort a friend who is upset, and that they are allowed to be angry if they've been treated unfairly. In other words, as parents, we should be much more supportive of our children by giving them psychological responsibility and helping them to develop psychologically, rather than just focusing on them being self-reliant and being able to carry away their plate from the table. Many parents today seem almost fearful of what their children might do without parental control over their children's games and activities, as well as interactions with other children. Children need to learn that there are good feelings as well as difficult feelings, and that it is okay to have both. We must not deprive them of this learning. But, of course, they must learn from a place of love that being human can be painful and sometimes hurts. Life can come as a shock for them if we protect them too much. This is where the difference between being an overprotective and a responsible parent lies. That is not to say that it is easy not to be overprotective, because it lies very deeply in us to do everything we can to look after our children. But not learning how to cope with life during childhood can become problematic later as an adult due to a lack of psychological resilience. An optimal level of frustration is required to be able to develop and be psychologically resilient. Optimal frustration means that we are exposed to situations that we have the capacity to deal with, but which also require us to make an effort. I have many clients in their 20s, and here I'm not talking about the young people who have serious mental disorders, but those, for example, where it is clear that what they have is a mild degree of social anxiety. A whole host of people can be found who, with the best of intentions, will take over. But this is a worrisome tendency, because we are taking away the responsibility to act from these young people in areas where they can take action. Overprotecting children and shielding them from strong emotions, no matter how understandable this may be, is not taking responsibility. Similarly, they cannot take responsibility if they are not allowed to learn about their own emotions, nor the important lesson that they can tolerate their emotions and overcome demanding or stressful situations. The parents have the difficult choices. Children cannot make the hard choices for themselves. As parents, we must do this for them, even for those children who are now teenagers and close to adulthood. For a while, I had a father in my consultation. The father was in therapy because of his anxiety. But he also had problems with his 17-year-old daughter, who smoked too much hashish. She had done so since she was 13, and her father watched silently from the sidelines. One day, the daughter was caught by the police in possession of hashish, and her problems began to fill more and more of their family's life. But not so much that the father felt that he could interfere in his daughter's life. All the other students at the high school smoke hash too, was the father's answer when I asked him why he did not do anything about his daughter's substance abuse. He also felt that she was so grown up that neither he nor her mother could say anything to her or do anything about it. Their daughter had to be grown up enough to know that it was not a smart thing to do. From my point of view, the father failed his daughter and did not assume his responsibilities as a parent. His daughter was obviously not capable of making good choices for herself. She was not mature enough, even though her father thought that she ought to be, based solely on her age. We still have a responsibility as parents to not just let go of our children when we can see that they are not capable of making good decisions for themselves. We must still know who their friends are, what they do in their free time, and keep an eye on them when they come home. Not like police officers, but as responsible parents. We must not accept that our children are well on the way to developing a substance abuse problem, or that they can go out and drink themselves to death without us lifting an eyebrow, because that is what all their other peers also do. We are giving our children responsibility for areas that could ruin their lives at an age when they're often not in a position to make better choices for themselves, because it is natural for them to make the choices that are easiest. If everyone else is smoking hash, or if everyone else is drinking themselves senseless, the easiest choice is to do the same. We are allowed to interfere more in their lives and ask more questions about things that matter to them. The father, in my example, did not solve the problem of his daughter's substance abuse. He felt sorry for her because she had fallen victim to a society where it was necessary to smoke hash at 17 to keep up with her peers. But he did not act, and he did not try to do anything else to help her. He had disclaimed any kind of responsibility for his daughter's life and his own. And it lay in the hands of others to patch things up again, both when it concerned his daughter's substance abuse and his own anxiety. As parents, we should be able to act as the good boss and make the tough decisions that we know are right for our child if our child is not capable of doing so themselves. Mobilizing the courage to take responsibility and act is easier than many people think. But it requires that you dare to think for yourself. And it requires that you do not put the responsibility for your own well-being and your children's well-being in the hands of others.